This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria, working on minimal sleep this morning after I got up to watch Man City lose in penalties. Unfortunately, with me is the digitally unimpaired this week, Zoe Carr. No knife incidents.
No, none this week. No, I've been pretty good.
Excellent. And also joined by Nathan Cooper-Brown. That's right. Do not adjust your audio. There is no Coops today. He has bailed on us. We were expecting him yesterday, bailed. Expecting him again today, bailed. Expecting maybe a doctor's certificate from like maybe Dr. Nick Riviera from The Simpsons saying that that something dodgy's gone on. But Coops, much like a number of the other famous podcasters that have been through Talking Split, has gone missing when required. So Shula frequently bailed. Zeppel just left one day, didn't even give us a goodbye or anything like that. Frequently only had the two of us. And so now it is just, Zoe, it's you and me. So this is going to sound probably fairly eerily similar to what our life has sounded like for the last 18 months, where we have nobody else to talk to except each other.
And just like that, everybody has switched off.
Yeah, and I can't say I necessarily blame them. So so we are back into the Ted Lasso world today. We did get probably halfway through the notes we had prepared for last week, and so thought we would dive back in this week when we had a little bit more time on our hands. So who knows how long this is going to go for today. This could be anything. But where we are going to start with in the Ted Lasso world is probably his strongest suit, I think, as a coach and someone that's involved with having to deal with people, which is the people management and relationship side of things. And this is such a key area for so many different coaches and on so many different levels, depending on if you're coaching a junior team, depending on if you're coaching a senior team at the pro level, whatever the case may be, relationships and how you deal with those is really such a vital part of being able to do the coaching side of things.
Yeah, and that's not just, you know, subject to just how you are with your players. That's how you are with administration, with assistants, with, and especially from a VJBL perspective, parents. So it's, yeah, it can be exhausting. And I think, you know, as you start to see in season two in particular, you know, when more issues start to creep up and things like that, that people management side starts to, he's certainly not bad at it, but it's not front of mind because he is exhausted from all the other things going on in his life. So, you know, I think making sure you've obviously got that relationship with your athletes is important. I think we talk about that every week, but you know, it's so much more. You've got to develop a relationship with parents and an understanding of your goals and what you're looking for. And if you don't have those things in place, then they're not going to follow you. You know, like we always talk about the car ride home being the most helpful or detrimental to an athlete's development from a coaching perspective. You know, if you've developed a relationship with the parents and they understand what your goal is for their child, that car ride message can become very different and can also become a bit of an echo, which becomes helpful.
And we see that play out in the show as well. There's one of their better players, Jamie Tartt, obviously has a father that is heavily involved, and you see the relationship play out a little bit over the course where, you know, Jamie's very arrogant, stuck up. You know, he is his own person, which is amusing in itself a lot of times, but it is something that he's clearly struggled with, where he's put up a little bit of a shield as to, I have to be this way because of how I was raised. And we don't always understand how, obviously, athletes are raised as junior athletes. We don't understand what goes on in their personal lives as well. So we do have to be mindful that it's not always going to be easy. It's not always going to be perfect. But you see in his situation where he used to love playing for his mum, and all of a sudden the dad put a whole mountain of pressure on him to has to perform, has to be the person that scores the goals, has to be the center of attention, has to play for the biggest clubs, has to be everything. And you see it in the last episode of season one where Ted's been on him the whole time. You've got to make the extra pass, make the extra pass, make the extra pass. He tried to make him run decoy in one of the sets that they run and he nastied up over it and didn't enjoy it. But he does the right thing. He makes the extra pass. And you see that last couple of scenes in season one where his dad's now tearing strips off him. Like, I can't believe you made the pass. What are you doing? Like, you're the star. You're supposed to score the goals. And despite all of that and AFC Richmond getting bumped down a league, Ted still has the class to send a note saying, way to make the extra pass. Like, it's something that had clearly been worked on with him, has clearly been invested. and all of a sudden it changes the perspective on things. So you need to know that the coach is in your corner and you're going to reward them when they do the right thing. Otherwise, it's just lip service. It doesn't mean anything to anyone.
Yeah, I mean, probably going off on a bit of a tangent already. What are we, a couple minutes in? But why do you think, because we see this a lot in junior sport, not just basketball, sport in general, why is Jamie's dad the way he is?
Yeah, it could be any number of reasons. Inferiority complex is usually a fairly large one of it. It's, you know, we have a lot of people that live vicariously through kids.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily just parents. That's sometimes coaches as well, yeah. where they're looking to coach because they're doing something that necessarily they couldn't do, I suppose, as a player. So they get involved in the coaching side. And don't get me wrong, we need those people to coach as well. Like, it's a really vital area. But what we have to realise is it's the player's journey. And just like the players have their journey, we have our journey as coaches as well, and parents will have their pathway as well. And I suppose for a parent, not putting myself in that situation, they have a limited amount of time to be a parent before those kids grow up and move on and they do their own thing, and their lives don't necessarily revolve around what the parent does as well. So we have to be mindful that every parent's child is the most important thing to them.
Mm.
Now, how we deal with that relationship, that's a different story altogether, because not everyone will be dealt with the same way. You know, we've all seen it. You know, there are the really high maintenance parents that you just sort of sit there and you bang your head against the wall every time the name comes up on the mobile, yeah. And you think, oh, what now?
It's Sunday.
Yeah, like, give me a spell. But there are the other ones, you don't even hear from them all year. And it's literally like, hey, nice to meet you. Here's my kid. We'll catch you guys in, you know, October.
Yeah.
And
tell me when I need to pay.
Yeah. Thanks for the season, coach. And it's like, what was your name again? Like, it's such a vast array of them. And, yeah. You know, the good ones are great to deal with. The not so good ones obviously can make your life a little bit difficult as a coach.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part. Have you got any advice for dealing with parents and how to keep them engaged and keep them on your side?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously there are times where you have to make a stand. You know, there's parents who they'll ring under the guise of feedback or email under the guise of feedback, but really what they want to do is complain and question maybe a selection or, you know, a thought or whatever it might be. And sometimes you just have to sort of knock that on the head. But the first thing to do as human beings, our first instinct is to go, I'm not dealing with that person now. Like, go away. I'm done with you. And that's normal. So if anybody's having that feeling, that is the normal feeling to have. But as coaches, we need to try and break through that. We need to have more conversations with these parents, obviously with the understanding of it has to be cut off somewhere. This can't go on for days, weeks, months, whatever. I'm willing to hear you out. I'm willing to explain my point of view without a comparison. I will not compare athletes or anything like that. But here's the information. Here's the data. This is what it is. And ultimately, it's so far, touch wood, worked out pretty well. Parents have been pretty understanding and, you know, basketball, unfortunately, it discriminates with, you know, athletic ability and height, but it also discriminates in the sense that we can't fit, you know, 40 kids into 10 or 15 or whatever we're picking at the time. So, yeah, I think it's as hard as it can be. I think more conversations with those parents. They don't know what they don't know. So trying to educate, again, it's not easy because some don't want to be educated. But keeping that communication line open, it also just gives you a bit of a barrier, I guess, if anything more was to come. You know, there's always a parent who wants to go above you. And if you've kept those communication lines open and you can walk in and honestly say, hey, I discussed this, this and this, here's my data for this selection and why, all that sort of stuff, if it was to get raised at a higher level, you know, you're covered. And unfortunately, we shouldn't have to think like that, but that's the way it is.
Cool. And that's just selection.
Yeah.
So there'll be things crop up over the course of the year. Like, you pick your team, that should be the happiest moment. You've usually dealt with two or three kids that are disappointed that they've missed out on your team or yeah. whatever the case may be. But I think it's really important to start off the season on a good note too. Like, a parent meeting is vital
yeah.
to start off with. Now, that may change what that looks like now. I know I used to always have one before the first training session, and it's just a little bit of an intro as to here's who I am, here's what I'm about. Make sure your kids are here on time. You know, make sure you're at games and training sessions and all that sort of stuff. These can probably be done by Zoom now.
Yeah,
I feel like that's probably the new way of doing this, where you're not too big an imposition on people's time. But I mean, for mine, it was always just really simple. Here's who I am. Here's what our goals are for the season. From my perspective, look, my job is three things with junior athletes: make sure the kids are having fun, make sure they're safe, and make sure they're improving. And as long as I cover off those three things, now you may have some other things you want to cover off with parents as well, like whether it be court time. You know, I need a team manager, that sort of stuff. You can absolutely do that at the same time. But I think it's always really good to start off on a positive note with very clear understanding as to where the lines are with that. Because I've always had a little bit of a rule. If there's a problem, don't contact me straight after the problem. Like, yeah, give it 24 hours, see if it's still a problem, and then we'll go from there. Because let's be realistic, the vast majority of problems occur after games. I always think that 24-hour rule just covers you off a little bit, just to make sure that you're not going to be in a position where, you know, you're put on the spot straight after a game. You then have to deal with conflict. That impacts on your ride home, the players' ride home, that sort of stuff as well. You have to be a little bit mindful. Any parent meetings, I always try and put it on before a training session, just so you know that you've got a little bit of a cut-off.
There's an out.
Yeah. So if you, say, meet at 5 o'clock but training starts at 5:30, you know that thing's done at 5:30, whereas if you meet after the training session, that thing can go for an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yeah.
I think it's always really important as well to have a neutral third party in there.
Yeah.
So someone that's, you know, maybe connected to the team, maybe a committee member, maybe it's your coach coordinator, whoever the case may be. Just to make sure it doesn't get heated or anything like that, there's another person that can say, actually, that's not what was discussed at that meeting. This is how it went, and this is what we agreed to moving forward as well. But parents are a really vital part of what we do with our junior athletes in particular.
Yep.
In some cases, senior athletes.
Yep.
You know, just because a player's moved on from juniors and into seniors doesn't mean you won't have to deal with parents as well. So it is a really important area to be mindful of.
Yeah, and I think just the key is you just can't avoid it. Avoidance makes it worse. So, you know, when you need to step up and – you know, have that hard conversation, you just have to do it.
Yep.
And honestly, once it's done, you actually feel better afterwards, because it's not, you know, oh, what's coming. And more often than not, it's not actually as bad as we make it out that it's going to be in our head. We, you know, always think it's going to be the worst, and they're going to say this and they're going to do that. And then ultimately, a lot of the time, not saying all the time, but a lot of the time, they're just looking for information. So having that conversation, get it out of the way, and then you can move forward.
Yeah, and it's not easy. Like, no. I'd love to sit here and tell you it's easy, but it's not. And, I mean, part of what you see in the show as well is, you know, Jamie is that way because of his upbringing and his dad, and there has to be a level of understanding in that some kids are the way they are, that it is not necessarily their fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might be really closed off, they might be really outgoing, whatever the case may be. You just need to understand that, and then you can deal with what goes on from that point as well. So the better the relationship is there, and the better you can understand what goes on in their lives, the better you're going to be able to coach them as well. And it doesn't mean you need to know everything about them and, you know, what's your favorite color, what's your favorite movie. You don't have to quite go that far, but just a little bit of understanding as to what makes them tick and how can you best tap into that, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you look at relationships, I mean, you look at how Ted deals with that, and this is an area I'm horrific at. Like, it's asking people their name and actually remembering it. Like, terrible. Like, absolutely terrible. One of my first VJBL teams, I had three Anns and I think two Sharons, and it was perfect. Like, the chances were I could actually get that name right.
And
we'll give this a crack and see how it goes. But remembering the name is really important, and asking questions and actually listening to the answer.
Yeah.
Like, that's where you get to know a little bit more about the relationship, and you do see it, that the biscuits with the boss thing.
Yeah.
So Ted meets with his boss, Rebecca, every Monday morning or whatever it is. I think it might even be every morning.
Yeah.
Walks in, gives us some biscuits, and then just asks a dumb question like, you know, what was the best music
concert
you went to?
First concert, favorite concert.
That sort of stuff. Like, that's a really good way of just finding out a little bit more and breaking. I don't think he actually cares about the answer.
Mm.
Like, it's more a case of being open and being able to talk to people. And some coaches will be better at this than others. Like, I'm not a great talker, despite being on a podcast.
Shocking.
But I'm not that sort of person. Like, I'm not just going to walk up to someone and start talking to them. That's not how I operate. And that's, you know, it's not necessarily right or wrong. It's something I wish I was better at, but I'm not. But that's going to be the same with every coach. Everyone will do that slightly differently. Some parents are just, they'll bowl up like a ball of energy and just bail you up in the corner. It's like, damn, what just happened? Like, you're going to have to deal with people differently. So having that ability to at least talk to them, I think, is a really important side of things.
Yeah, I think what's great about that relationship and the way, you know, obviously in the beginning, Rebecca's using Ted as a pawn to destroy the club. And through that relationship building, she then starts to sort of wane a bit, so starts to second guess what she's doing, and then ultimately ends up feeling awful about it. And had he not built that relationship with her and broke down those barriers, it may have been different. So, like, to put that into context, I guess, in the Victorian basketball landscape, you know, having an understanding of who your direct, you know, if it's your director of coaching or if you're, you know, with a senior team, if it's a board or whoever it might be, having an understanding of who they are, what they want, and how you're going to sort of work that together is really important. Because if you go in there and you've got, you know, ideas and thoughts on, we're going to win this, like, this is what we're going to do, I'm going to get the VJBL title, or we're going to get the, you know, youth league title or whatever, you know, NBL one. But the board and the director of coaching and all those, you know, from an administration level, what their goal is to get sort of more athletes through their pathways and get them moving forward and getting them into state teams, getting them into, you know, off to college and those sort of things. Those two things might not marry up. You know, you might have to coach two different ways. So having a relationship with whoever the direct decision maker is I think, really important and becomes then helpful to you in knowing what the approach should be from the club perspective as well, so you're on the same page.
Yeah, and you see, like, Ted starts to build relationships with players a number of different ways. So he'll ask other people, you know, what makes this person tick. He'll do things like buy books that are individualized to who he's dealing with. So Roy Kent gets one book, but Jamie Tart gets a different book, and, you know, yeah, just trying to delve in, and maybe I want you to look over in this direction, and will this relate to something that you're going through, perhaps? Like, it's a way of building that relationship with the player. And look, you know, Booktopia has got enough books out there and enough people to buy them. You don't need to go down that path with everyone, but it might be, you know, an article you see online or something like that you can flick to a player and say, actually, this might relate a little bit to what you're going through and where I'd like to see you get to as well. I think there's different ways to do that to connect. Sam Obasanya, one of the players, like, you see him go through it. You know, he's really down. He's missing home early on. So they throw him a party. You know, and again, not suggesting, you know, you need to throw parties for every player or anything like that, but digs a little bit deeper, finds out what the problem is, finds a couple of things to remind him of home, and just makes him feel a little bit more welcome around the group. And that's a really valuable part of it, that the people need to feel valued before you'll actually see their full potential. Very rarely do you see the best of someone when they're unhappy. But if you can get their personal life sorted and get that calm and under control, that will usually lead to better success on the court.
Yeah, well, and to take it in a completely different direction, you even see he goes to a school and does a school visit, and then towards the end of that episode, he sees one of the little students in the village, if you want to call it, and stops and says hello, and, you know, the little kid asks how his nose is and all that sort of stuff. And it was just, you know, you look at that and you go, well, that child and that parent are going to come to games now. Like, they're going to be invested in this team. It's just a simple thing. It took him a couple minutes and off he went. Now, I know, obviously, from a VJBL perspective, that's probably not something we're looking for, but from a senior perspective, you know, you want those junior kids feeling like they are connected and they know somebody. They're going to come and watch somebody they know. They'll support somebody they know. So that child now feels like he knows Ted, so they're going to come and they're going to continue to support the club even when, you know, things aren't going well. And that's just another example of, you know, the smallest action getting, you know, in managing people and doing a great thing for the club, like the smallest little thing and how amazing it could be.
Yeah, and you look at the relationships that are involved with the coaching staff as well. And, I mean, you have Beard, who's been with him for years. You have Nate, and we'll talk about him in a sec. Roy Kent, who comes in sort of late in the whole thing, like, has moved from that player to the coaching world. And you look at it early on, Nate was the kit man. that didn't really have a whole lot of investment into the actual coaching of the team and got bullied a lot by the players. And one of the players went to Ted and said, hey, you need to cut this bullying out. He's like, nah, it's not my world.
It'll make it worse.
It's going to make it worse, and completely agree with where he was going with it. But didn't just leave it to fester either. Like he sort of put a couple of little seeds in place with the other people around the plate and said, well, okay, I'm not going to fix it, but you possibly could. Yep. And just started that little bit of an organic feed through the group that it's the players group. It's not necessarily about the coach. If the coach has to hit everyone with a hammer every time something goes wrong, it loses a lot of value and it loses a lot of meaning. And it's almost like you're complaining to the mum and dad about someone being bullied, and that doesn't really fix the problem in that space. So how he manages and almost manipulates, and unfortunately coaching is a lot of manipulation as well. Like you need to try and get people to do things they don't necessarily want to do or buy in to do because it's better for the group if they do it.
Yeah, well, and that then sparks a, I suppose, not a change because he was always a leader, but Roy then becomes the leader of the group. You know, he's calling players out when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing and standing up for some of the athletes that are, or like Sam, for instance, who Jamie's picking on or treating poorly, even mid-game getting into a bit of a punch-on with him because of the way he's treating Sam. So, and then you link that in with the book because the book he was given was about leadership. And, you know, he's not having to say, Roy, I want you to be the leader. But now Roy's the leader. So it was really, really clever how we went about it. Because I think sometimes when you tell people you need to be the leader, if they don't know how or they're not sure or it's not in their DNA, like they're not wired to lead, it's going to be a disaster because they're going to be uncomfortable. They're going to feel like they're going to have to be doing things that they don't know how to do and things like that. Whereas, you know, skewing it this way of this is what I want from you, but without directly saying it, I thought was brilliant.
Exactly. And it really showed him that really he was still caring for Nate, but he was just doing it through ways that he wasn't even aware of it.
Yeah.
And you sort of see it come to a head at the end of season two where there's a real blow up of Nate felt supported, he felt loved, he felt involved in everything, and all of a sudden that scaffolding went away and it became a really lonely place for him too. Mm-hmm. And again, we talk about the parental influence on that. Like Nate is who he is because of his upbringing. Like he always felt like the mum probably mollycoddled him a little bit and looked after him all the time, but nothing was ever good enough for the dad.
Yeah.
And so you look at how Nate has become and it's like, well, he became that real self-loathing type that had to be almost volatile, whereas Nate's best characteristics were always that he was caring. Mm. Like he saw the dynamics and trying to fit in and being invested in what was going on. But it's a really dangerous place as well. If you, all of a sudden you're really supportive of someone and then you take that away, what's the reaction going to be? Is it going to be one of now I'm self-sufficient and I can stand up? Or is it going to be I'm so used to having the support around me and now it's gone? Now I'm disenchanted and I'm disappointed that it's gone. So how we deal with our junior athletes in that is we have to treat them all like they're the most important person in the world. And it's difficult to do because it requires so much energy from a coach to be able to be invested in 10 athletes that all have different personalities, different backgrounds, different motivations, different reasons to be there. That's not easy to do. But it is such a vital part of it as well that if you're not invested in them, that can be a really lonely place as well. And who knows what the response is going to be. Some will certainly play better out of spite. Because it's like, now that you've left me alone, now I'm going to prove to you that, you know, I'm better than this. Some will feel a little bit isolated, different for everyone. And it is really important that the coaches understand your players, but also understand the dynamics of your coaching staff as well. You probably don't want two coaches that are the same on your bench. Now, for consistency, it's probably going to be really good. But there also needs to be a little bit of a foil to if one coach is very rah-rah and up and in and outwardly vocal, you probably don't want two of those because that can be too much for coaches or for players as well. So you need someone that can just play off that a little bit and say, well, okay, you don't need that at the moment. Here's what I can offer you instead as a coach.
Yeah. I mean, I think with the coaching setup as well, you know, you've got Beard who is the lowest, but doesn't need any praise, doesn't need any, you know, recognition or anything like that. He just is, like we said last week, reliable, turns up, does his job, supports, calls out when he needs to, and it's perfect. what we didn't see coming was Nate's neediness of constant reassurance. You know, he needed that constant, like he says, something like, you made me feel like I was the only person in the world, and then you just took that away. And that is really dangerous, I think, to have on a bench, because that means the focus from Nate, his perspective is that the focus should be on him and not the athletes, and the focus needs to be on the athletes doing, you know, obviously you don't ignore him, of course not, but, you know, needing that, being so constantly needy for, you know, praise and attention and all that sort of stuff makes it really difficult. But I also think when we're talking about like a coaching staff and coaching with athletes and finding that balance, it's also really important with the athletes to make sure that they understand who gives you what. So, for instance, you know, you always want to make sure there's somebody who can look someone in the eye and give them the message that they need, and then they need to know who they can go to pick them back up or talk them through it if they don't quite understand it. You know, you sub somebody off as a head coach and you say ABC and then they go sit down. That all happens within sort of 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and they might not quite understand it. So knowing who the coach is on your bench to say, go and speak to her about this or him about this, and sort of have that understanding of we need to pick them back up and get them back where they need to be. Because I think sometimes we get a bit caught in, you know, we've got to make sure that they're comfortable and we've got to make sure that they're feeling good and all that sort of stuff. And I completely agree with it. But they also need to be coached as well and held accountable. So having that sort of yin and yang relationship on your bench, I think, is helpful when you're talking about managing people, because they're not feeling like they're constantly being screamed at, but they're also not being constantly coddled either.
Yeah, and it's a difficult line to find, because everyone, like, some people respond better to negative reinforcement, some better to the positive reinforcement, some don't want to be told anything they're doing well, some need to hear the things that they can fix. Some don't even need a great deal of coaching, in all honesty, because they're probably harsher on themselves than they are anyone else. Mm. So they need a different type of message as well. So understanding your players is really important. You see it with Isaac halfway through the second season. He's just in a funk, like cannot do anything right, and is clearly in his own head, really hard on himself, constantly finding ways to screw things up that he's not normally screwing up. And so the response to that is, well, let's take him back to where he really loved playing football. Mm. And it's not so much about the success and are you winning, are you losing, are you scoring 30 points. It's more about, can you find the love of the game again? And so they take him back to the old outdoor soccer pitches where it's literally just pick up.
Yeah.
Effectively, they're playing and you see him run around and act like a lunatic and you know, the jawing starts and all that sort of stuff as well. But that's where it was fun for him. So I think it's a vital part of coaching is, let's not forget what is fun for the athletes. And in particular, as we're about to hit the courts again, unfortunately, we are about to hit probably VJBL trial time, which is going to be an issue. So everyone's anxiety and emotions will be ramped up because they're trying to make the team that they're trying to make and all those kinds of things as well. But let's not forget the fun for the athletes. They have to love the sport and they have to enjoy turning up to it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you take the joy out of it and what's the point? You know, it's I look at it and when I try and think back on when I was a player, particularly when I was a junior player, you know, I loved basketball and I can't even tell you why. I just loved turning up. I loved competing. I loved being around my friends. But is that what kept me going back, or was it just super fun? You know, like, it's if we rob them of the joy, particularly after the last 2 years where they've missed so much school, so much sport, so much family time, all those sort of things, we won't get them back. So, yeah, I think that's a really good point, making sure that they are still in love with the game and they're not just turning up because, well, I used to turn up, so now I'm turning up again.
So we move on from the relationship side of things into the making sure you take care of yourself and the world that probably people don't see away from coaching as well, in that, you know, they see the coach turn up every Friday night and every Sunday morning and every midweek session, and people probably don't understand what they go through to be there. For a lot of people, it is a big sacrifice to actually coach a team in the first place. They give up time with their family, with their friends. Financially, it can be an imposition on them as well. There's so much that goes into actually coaching that it can be lost on people. And I know we've spoken about coach welfare a number of times on the podcast, and we'll probably continue to do that, so no apologies there. But but it is an area where people aren't aware of what a win and a loss can do to a coach. And depending on the level you deal with, that can obviously have a bigger impact or a smaller impact. But also what an altercation can do, what a hallelujah moment can do for people as well, just some kind words at the right time. Those kinds of things can make a massive difference to coaches. And there was a great webinar on last week that Pete Lonigan put on through Basketball Australia with Cody Royal. And he's the author of The Tough Stuff, the book, which I would highly recommend people going and having a look at. But a lot of it was around the welfare of the head coach and what can be put around the head coach to make sure that they're supported and they're in a position where they can be looked after as well, because there is a massive weight that goes on to coaches. And this is what Cody spoke about last week. You know, he spoke about the weight and he spoke about the loneliness of coaching, because it can feel like you're out on an island. You're there by yourself, regardless of your support staff. If you're the head coach, it starts and ends with you.
Yep.
It's on you. Spoke about the identity crisis. Like, if you're not a coach, what are you? Mm-hmm. Which can be a really big thing. The politics, and we're not even going to delve into the politics of sport. And to be honest, I don't even think we could do it justice in like an 18-part series. We're not touching on that one as well. The family issues, which is usually you have to give up time with your family to go and coach, which is not easy to go and do. The job uncertainty, which is a very real thing. There's the imposter syndrome that actually, am I good enough to do this job? Like that's not easy to do for everyone, because you do second guess it a lot, which is difficult, because if you don't believe in yourself, why would anyone else believe in yourself? The constant criticism that comes with coaching, which can be from yourself or from others. And, you know, if you read social media enough, you're going to find someone that disagrees with what you're doing, which is they're not overly difficult to find. Just the fatigue, the expectations that go with it as well. Like, I mean, at a pro level, you're potentially having to move for jobs. You know, that can be a real difficult sell for people as well. Like, there is that weight that sits on coaches. Now, I put my notes together last week. If you do want a copy of the notes from that webinar, please, by all means, email me. They did go out to the directors of coaching last week, but you can absolutely email me, and I'm more than happy to send those on. But there is so much that goes on with head coaches and assistant coaches, to be fair, that people don't realise as part of the coaching world. And you see Ted deal with it as well. He gets the panic attacks, the anxiety. He's obviously dealing with stuff in his home life as well, where he's halfway across the world. He's not with his son, going through a divorce. There's so much that goes on. And usually, I find with coaches, the actual coaching is kind of like the safe space where they can forget all the dramas that's going on. They're on court, they're focused in, they're dialed in. But as soon as that goes away again, now what?
Yeah, I think with, you know, when we talk about the psychology and the coach welfare and taking care of yourself, you know, I'm a pretty, pretty big walking testament of not taking care of yourself. You know, like it's the, you let things fester and you let them, you go over them over and over and over in your head. And, you know, you could come home, coaches come home from, you know, Friday night games and, you know, what could I have done differently, or should I have done this or that call or this sub, or can't believe that happened. And it can, I know, hopefully you're okay with me saying this, but when you were coaching juniors, you would come home on a Friday and I would know, if I didn't know the result, I knew the result by your body language, how you were feeling, you know, you were, and it could at times creep over until Sunday, until you got to train again and sort of start to right the wrongs, I guess. So there's, yeah, you see in the show, you know, Ted is a cup filler for everybody else, and eventually not filling his own cup catches up with him. And seeing the psychologist, you know, he didn't want to in the beginning because of past experience and things like that, but once he starts to do that, things start to – the weight starts to lift off his shoulders and he's, and you start to see the old Ted again. And so I think it's really important for all coaches just to have somebody that you can bounce things off of, you know, set yourself some boundaries. You know, I've got the drive home to think about this and to mull over this and maybe, you know, 20 minutes once I get home to write some thoughts down, and then I've got to let that go and I've got to move on, because ultimately, you know, whilst it is the most important thing to a lot of people, it is basketball, and we still need to make sure we're taking care of ourselves and we're not dwelling on all of this stuff, you know, for long periods of time.
I feel like that was some fairly pointed feedback in my direction.
No, I'm exactly the same.
It is super difficult.
Remember my first weekend in coaching in Sewell, and we'd had a really turbulent lead up. We had a couple of athletes, WNBL level, that then just packed up and left. And I had this group of babies who were just lovely, but they were so young and so raw going into this and going into Sewell, and it had just been so turbulent. I got a tech foul, which I will wear. It was a bit soft, but I'll wear it because I engaged. And then I got another tech foul. I yelled out, great job, red, because we were wearing red. And the ref thought I yelled out, great job, ref. And so teched me again and threw me out. So I was fuming. Thankfully, Rob was there, so I was able to drive home because that probably wouldn't have been, you know, a great idea. We get home and I go to open up my laptop and start putting some thoughts down, and my computer won't turn on. And it just hit me. It just all hit me at once, and I started to panic. My heart started to race. I started to sweat. I couldn't breathe. From the surface, all because my computer didn't turn on. But really, it was like 2 weeks worth of just craziness that I'd held on to. And whilst I'd spoken to you about it, I hadn't really spoken to it to a point to let go of it or to move on from it. And then obviously the things that happened throughout the day. So I held on to that. I shouldn't have. I should have just gone, oh, well, move on. Do what you can, control what you can control. And I didn't. And that's how it came out. I'm not somebody who suffers from panic attacks or anxiety or anything like that. So it was quite confronting and quite frightening. So, yeah, not just at you. I do it too.
No. Well, and to be perfectly honest, a lot of the time it's not about the win and the loss. A lot of the time it's about a run-in that you've had either with a parent, with an athlete, with a ref, something along those lines. Like the coach down the other end's been a bit of a jerk or didn't shake your hand or something like that in lines, or had a bit of a crack as they've walked past. And it's like, damn, I'm giving up my time for this, and this is how I hold on to this sort of stuff. And that is, like, I remember coming home from some Friday nights and the first question is, you lost. It's like, no, we won by 20. Like, well, what's the problem? Well, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, and now I'm pissed. Like, it's annoying me. And you're dead right. I would usually hold on to that until the Sunday when you almost get to close the book on it, because now you'd be able to move on, you train your kids, you get to a point where you can move on from it a little bit more now. And it's not easy to do. Like, I think there are times where sometimes I've done the old voice memo on the way home where you almost just need to get it all out.
Yeah.
And you need to be angry and you need to be frustrated with it. And it's like, cool, now I've got that out, I can delete that and I don't need to hear that again, because I've had my little tantrum about what was going on and it wasn't quite working. I know the Friday night phone call between coaches is usually a fairly amusing one. Yeah. Like you're driving home from wherever you are at 11 o'clock at night and you're dealing with someone that's gone through the same thing. So there's a little bit of group therapy that goes on with that as well, which is a really good space to be in, because it's someone that actually understands. It's not always as easy as you might be talking to your partner or a friend that's not as quite as engaged in this space. And they can sit there and go, why do you care so much?
Yeah.
Like, what's the
That's the worst thing you can say to a coach.
It is. But someone that at least understands that as well can be really helpful to just move on from it. It is incredibly difficult to do, because we've all seen those sleepless nights where 3:30 a.m. rolls around and you're on like Global Shopping Network or something like that, trying to buy the latest, you know, like ab roller or something like that. And it's like, you know, maybe that's a really good idea. All because you've had something go wrong, you know, yeah. potentially 8 hours earlier, and you see it in the show. It's they lose their FA Cup game to Man City, and Beard goes on an all night bender.
Yeah,
where he bounces around, he sees people that he's never met before. He's wearing glitter pants somehow, like he's got a hold of those,
almost bashed somehow,
by other people. Yeah. Like it's, but that's what you go through as a coach. Like you run through everything that's going through your head, and sometimes you imagine stuff that didn't actually happen.
Yep.
You're not necessarily in the right mind. Like you have that sort of self-loathing thing where everything went wrong. And it's my fault that everything went wrong. And you hear it on Ted Lasso as well, where every time Coach Beard sees a TV, it's Thierry Henry sticking the boot in saying, yeah. you know, why did Coach Beard not do this? It's his fault. Like, what's going on there? And you can play all this out in your mind. Yeah. Like, oh, didn't play this player enough. Their parents are going to be upset. And in the most times, the parents understand. Like, they're okay. It's like, yeah, that's all right. They didn't get in as much as they normally would. That's fine. Like, yeah. they're actually okay with it. But because you play all this stuff out in your head, it consumes you, and being able to let go or having someone that you can at least bounce those off a little bit is a really helpful way of just moving past that. It doesn't necessarily have to be someone that is involved in basketball, but it might just be someone that you trust that you can put a little bit of faith in to have those kind of conversations.
Yeah, and I think as a, I suppose, a bit of a tip, and this might only work for me, so take it with a grain of salt if you like, but as the listener, sometimes people just want to vent what they've got to say. They're not looking for you to solve their problems. They just want to get it out to somebody who is, like you said, understanding, has been there before, has been through it, and cares as much about their team or their program as you do about yours. So what's, I think, was has been great. And I've been really lucky with you in the way when I lose it, which people who know me know that it can be pretty epic sometimes. But you know, you'll sit there and you'll go, yeah, that sucks. Like that sucks. That is, yep, that's not, you're right, that's not fair. Or, you know, whatever. You're not saying, well, what you need to do is da-da-da-da-da, because sometimes that can frustrate people even more, because like, oh, okay, so I'm not doing this, as well as all this stuff that's going on. So if people, you know, it's a really hard, I think, skill to have, to be able to tell the difference between when someone's wanting to vent and just get some things out with a trusted ear, and when they are looking for advice. But I think, yeah, if we can, I found it really helpful when a listener has said to me, like, yeah, I agree, that sucks. And there's been times as well where I have been wrong or out of line with what I've been saying or my take on something. And you've sat there and said, yeah, that sucks. Yep, I'm sorry that's happened, you know, whatever. And then a few days later you've said, actually, you know what, we need to talk about this. So the emotion's gone, all that sort of stuff, and you can talk about it a bit more rationally. So,
and look, there are times, let's not make out that I'm some cerebral being that can understand situations. Certainly not the case. There have been times where it's like, look, are you looking for solutions or sympathy? And had to ask the question, and it's like, sympathy. I'm like, cool. Yeah, that sucks. Yeah, that's no good. But it's what it is. So everyone will need something different at different times.
Yeah.
You know, if what you're going through in a season might be very different to what you're going through in a tournament, where you literally just need a little 3-minute check-in with someone just to get your mind off things. Like, it's, I know after games, there'll be times I'll come home and play a little game on my mobile, which is just dumb, just to get my mind away from what I was doing beforehand. And it's the way of sort of snapping it.
Yeah,
a little bit is to try and go down that path. And you know, we've spoken a lot about like coaches' diet and those kinds of things as well. Like, the solution is not the 11:30 p.m. pizza. Yeah. And trust me, I have 100% tried that. I can give you pretty much a fairly decent rating on every pizza place between Mentone all the way through to Doreen, back down to the other side of Victoria. There are times where it's really good. Like, if you're catching up with coaches after a game and you're grabbing something to eat, you know, that can be a really good space. But the late night meal,
the Macca's drive through,
yeah, like yeah. that sort of stuff. Macca's proud sponsors of the VJBL, incidentally. Yeah. Those meals that sort of sit heavy, that lead you to not sleeping, that tend to be very high in salt. So consequently, you wake up or you're just continually drinking to try and get rid of that sort of salt. That's not helpful to you. So being mindful as to what your process is going to be is really important as well. One of the things I can absolutely recommend, though, stay off social media.
Yes.
Like, nobody has got smarter, I believe, from social media after a game. Like, it's, you know, whether it be at the pro level where the last thing you want to do is look at what the fans are saying, whether it be at the VJBL level where you might have some parents on there that have got their opinion on what happened as well. I absolutely wouldn't have kids on social media in the first place. Like, it's, you know, you don't want to know what goes on in their world. But it is, it's something that I don't think, there's a place for social media, but it is not when you're, no one's felt better, I feel like, after going on social media. You normally feel worse, and it's like, oh God, like, what have I done by going through this? It's not really a value add, I find. Like, it can be great for certain things like finding resources and connecting with people and all that sort of stuff, but I don't think there have been too many that have felt better after going on social media when they've already felt pretty average.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a real sort of toxic place at times, you know, and especially, you know, you end up with everybody has an opinion and everyone is entitled to that. But 20 years ago, that opinion maybe made it to 5 people. Now that opinion makes it to over 1,000 people in 10 seconds, which can then, again, add to the frustration, anxiety, you know, whatever it might be, even fear. And there's also how we interpret that. Like, there's so much more to it. You know, I might write something which I, in my mind, sounds fine or neutral or even a compliment, but you might read it in a different way, and now there's an issue. So, yeah, just staying away from it altogether, but near your games, you know, near your games or whatever that might be, away from your games, go nuts, do whatever you want to do, share the podcast, you know, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, it's, yeah, it can be a really, really toxic place. And then there are people on there, obviously, you know, trolls and things that are just there to try and get a rise out of people. And that's not good for anybody.
No, and you see Nate go through it. So Nate, who sort of pulls out a win out of kind of a little bit of nowhere in the FA Cup against Tottenham, and goes looking for self-gratification on the social media, looking for people saying, oh, how good is Nate, you know, the wonder kid, and, you know, which he gets wrong, which is kind of amusing itself, but it's that sort of thing. He goes looking for all the positives and people saying how great he is, but gets hung up on the one person saying, yeah, I don't think he's that good.
Mm.
And that's the one that sticks.
Or you see him, like, afterwards, and because of what social media is, you are the wonder kid one day and then you're nothing the next. And so he's still continually scrolling through looking for people to be talking about him, and they're not, which then adds to his insecurity of, well, Ted's ignoring me, they're ignoring me, you know, I'm by myself.
Yep, it is. So be careful is the world I would live in there. Of course, hashtag talking split can be very helpful for any coaches looking for it on Twitter, but it is a minefield. So just be, if you've got some rules in place with what you'll post, when you'll post it, the pause before you post mantra is a really promising one, I find, on a number of levels. But there are times where it can be really good and it can take your mind off things, but there are other times where it can be really consuming as well.
Absolutely.
Moving into the last bit of the podcast, the quotables.
And yes.
There are so many little words of wisdom that you pick up that you may not even pick up halfway through it, and you could go and watch it a second time and think, oh, actually, that's pretty clever as to how they did that. There are lots of little things here that I think can apply to everyone's coaching. My favourite, be curious, not judgmental.
I think that's everybody's favourite.
It's incredible, but it is bang on the money, because just because you have an opinion on something doesn't mean you get to pass judgment on it without knowing the full story. And we all do it. We all sit across from a coach and say, why'd they do that? We sit in the stands and go, geez, I'll be doing this. We watch it on a live stream and go, this makes no sense. You don't know the full story.
Yeah.
So make sure you know what's going on before you go and make some outlandish statement as to, and the sweeping remarks of, oh, that coach is a terrible coach. Well, yeah. You don't know what that coach is going through. You don't know what their players are going through. You don't know what they're going through personally. Be very careful about what you throw out there without understanding the whole concept of that.
Yeah, well, and it leads into Ted getting to know Jamie and why he is the way he is. You know, if he just judged Jamie as an arrogant, you know, up himself jerk, then he wouldn't have ended up getting the best out of him. but was curious, asked questions, put him in positions to have to tell stories about who he is and why he is, and, you know, found out, you know, saw what firsthand, ended up seeing firsthand, you know, what his dad was doing after he'd just won the game for them effectively. And he's still getting yelled at and all that sort of stuff. So his curiosity meant that they could still have a relationship, because a lot of other coaches would go, oh, get stuffed, you're too hard to work with or deal with. So, yeah, it just works on so many levels. It's not easy. I know as soon as I heard that, I've tried to apply it to everything, and I get it right sometimes, but I get it wrong other times as well. But as I think as long as we're trying, you know, it could lead to some really good things.
I do love a locker room. Smells like potential.
yeah.
Doesn't always smell
like
potential.
Don't know that he's been in many change rooms.
No, true. The old Lynx after body spray, not always the best thing. But
Africa?
Yeah, but what it can be at times, though, is just a really promising place with a bit of a blank slate. In particular, when he throws this out, it's like the first time in the locker room with the new team, and it is, what can I make this? What can we make this as a group? This could be anything, depending on how we all buy in or work around each other. And that's a really important place to be, is that you should probably never go into a season thinking, oh, God, what's this going to be like? Every new season, you start 0-0, and, you know, it could be anything. It could be a player that's never had an opportunity before now is in a situation where they're going to get a great opportunity, and they can be a completely different person at the end of it. So there is potential in everything. Like the locker room part, maybe shelve that. But the smells like potential, that's a fairly important part.
Yeah. There's value in every experience. Sometimes the value can be what not to do, but that's still valuable. That's still something that you can then add to yourself as a coach, how you deal with things, how you approach things, all those sort of things. So, yeah, you know, if you're walking into a season and, you know, your team might not quite be where you think it should be, the opportunity now is that you get to coach, you get to really have an influence and help shape and mold them as athletes and as people, and like that's really cool, as opposed to walking into a ready-made where you kind of just sit there and run subs. Like, you know, whilst winning is fun, winning like that I don't believe is fun. I think finding, for me, that sort of statement is finding the value in every experience regardless.
Relax, they're just kids. So this is said before they go and train them for the first time. It's I won't out the coach, but I remember talking to a coach who had been a long-time Vic Metro coach. He's like, geez, I'm nervous before their first trial. You've got to be kidding. You've done this so many times. What's the issue here? He's like, you know, if you're not nervous, you know, do you really care? And that was kind of the concept. Like, he wanted that little bit of a nerve about them without remembering, hey, they're just as nervous. Yeah. And they're looking at you for a little bit of guidance and direction on this one. Relax. They're just kids. Like, do what you normally do and just let it all play out from there.
Yeah, I think I have to tell myself that. Sometimes I find myself expecting too much from them, expecting them to be able to do things. And I go, hold on a second, they're 14 or 13. It's like, that's that's not fair, the expectations that I'm putting on them. But, you know, because of the way, you know, our kids or our athletes carry themselves a lot of the time, it's really easy to forget that they are so young. Keeping that in mind sometimes, you know, is my expectation of them, does that directly relate to their age and, you know, their ability? Now, there'll always be some athlete that comes through that just knocks that out of the park, you know, at 12 and 13 can do things that they shouldn't be able to do. But we need to keep them as the exception and not the rule.
The one that's probably got the most amount of notoriety out of the Ted Lasso universe, the Be a Goldfish.
Yes.
Now, I'm not completely on board, ooh, to be fair. So the whole concept is goldfishes have, 10-second memories. You know, something that has potentially got them down 11 seconds ago doesn't even feature in their mind anymore because they only have a 10-second memory to remember it. So anytime you make a mistake, hold on to it for a little bit, but then it's gone. I'm not completely okay with this. I think you need to hold on to it to a point. You have to learn from it is the big thing. So if that whatever has happened – allows you to learn from something, hold on to it for longer than the 10 seconds. But I understand the concept behind you got to let stuff go.
Yeah, like what you're saying I think is spot on. Learn from it and then move on. You know, if you – I mean, we're just talking about it with the coaches. We hold on to stuff and we've got to let some things go. So take the lessons out of and it could be a possession. It could be a whole game. It could be a season. It could be anything. But take the lessons from it and then move on. Because if you let it bog you down as an athlete or as a coach, it's going to become a really joyless environment.
One of your favourite quotes up next?
You're so certain that you're one in a million that sometimes you forget out there you're one in 11. I love that. Like, it's athletes sometimes, especially ones with big dreams or aspirations, you know, they need to be somewhat selfish to get to that level. You know, because to do that, they have to care about themselves. They have to look after their bodies. They have to make sure that they're training at 100%. They have to make sure that everybody around them is training at 100%, all that sort of stuff. Sometimes, though, that can spill over into arrogance that we saw. You know, I'm better than everybody, so what's the point? All that sort of stuff, which then on court leads to, you know, one on two, I'm going to try and force it over the top of two defenders because nobody else here, like a miss from me is better than a miss from anybody else because no one else is as good as me. So, you know, and that's where he starts to try and dive into that, you know, make the extra pass, we're a team, all that sort of stuff. And eventually they get there. But, yeah, obviously took a bit of work.
Yeah, and it's not easy to do.
No.
Like that's the art of coaching, though, is being able to get people to play as a team. Because you can have an uber-talented team, but if they can't play together, or sorry, you can have uber-talented individuals that may not necessarily come together as part of a team.
Mm.
And that's the difficult part, is trying to have other people sacrifice for each other, because that's the probably the true test is, will I give up my stuff for the good of the team? And, you know, that's not easy to do. Sometimes players need educating in that world. Mm. Sometimes coaches need educating in that world. Like, are they prepared to shelve their own egos and call less plays from the sidelines because their point guard's got it?
Yeah.
So that kind of thing as well. So you have to be a little bit careful as to how much control and input you want into that space.
Well, and what's really cool, though, is in the second season, Ted asks Roy, what's wrong with Jamie? Like, why isn't he playing well? Why isn't he doing this? And Roy, as an ex-player, basically says, you're the reason. You turned him into a team player, like too much of a team player. Like, what made him great was that he was fearless and he was super talented and he was willing to, you know, say, hey, I'm going to do this. So it kind of took a turn too far the other way. And they come up with a really great way to signal, I'll let you watch it, to Jamie when it was time to be that little bit more selfish.
Success is not about the wins and losses. It's about being the best versions of yourselves on and off the field. And this could not ring truer for youth sport in particular.
Yeah.
And look, it still applies to seniors, there's no question. But in particular now, like, wins and losses mean less now than they ever have previously, I feel. Like, it's more about getting back on court, having the social connection, having the ability to do your own thing and have a little bit of fun whilst playing. I think that's actually what matters. You know, can you become a good person if you're not already? And not easy for some people to do, because inherently they're more concerned about the win and the loss will define me, and nothing could be further from the truth. If you're developing your athletes to be good people and good players, tick the box. You have succeeded straight away.
Yeah. it's hard because as coaches, we want to win. That's what we want to do. We want to compete. We want to win. But if you can be a coach that can not sacrifice wins, so you don't lose games on purpose, but if you can shift your focus to development and to be athlete-focused rather than win-loss-focused, first of all, you will probably – it might be back end of the season, but you'll probably end up winning more games. But people will want to play for you. you know, they'll gravitate towards you. They'll understand that, you know, it's not just about that. You don't define them as a successful athlete just because of what they can do for you, and you end up getting better results, better buy-in, and probably what you want a lot quicker.
It's the hope that kills you. And we've heard this one a lot. It's
this one's so sad.
It is.
I wish Coops was here. We could be talking about Sunderland.
Well, we could be.
Although they're winning at the moment, aren't they?
Well, it doesn't really count the league they're in. But it is one of those areas where you can go in if you know you're a chance and then you lose. That's more deflating than when you know you're not a chance and going. And that can say a lot. You know, you might be the bottom team on the ladder, trying to knock off the top one, all of a sudden, tie game with 30 seconds to go, you have this hope that this might be the time, and then all of a sudden it's ripped away from you. That's the one that stings.
Yeah.
Like, you'd almost feel like you'd rather lose by 20 than lose in that sort of a situation. And it is very true for a lot of coaches in that it is the hope that kills you. Like, you hope for a different result, and it doesn't usually work out that way.
Oh, living the life of the underdog is the best. Yep. You know, if no one expects anything, you know, WNBL Grand Final, the last game I played in the National League, and we came up against a very, very talented Canberra Capitals team, and no one expected a thing from us. So we're able to just go out there and play and have a crack, and, you know, it was great. I think if it was flipped, it'd probably be so much more nerve-wracking because we're expected to win, so we have to win, and especially when we're, you know, within 1 and 3 points towards the end of the game, what that would do, it's interesting how that would affect different players.
Yep. So sometimes the Diamond Dogs are just chatting about stuff and no one has to solve anything and nothing changes. And this relates back to what we were talking about before.
Yep.
Like, sometimes you need to be a support, sometimes you need to offer solutions, sometimes you just need to be a firing board, it almost feels like. It's just, yeah, look, get it all out, let me have it, and we'll go on from there. So we've probably spoken about that one enough as it is. Your favourite Higgins quote.
A good mentor hopes you will move on. A great mentor knows you will. I think that's awesome. And I think something we can get stuck in is we want to try and, especially in sort of club land, if you want to call it that, because we want to make sure we have the best coaches we can for the kids. We want to try and keep coaches, instead of encouraging them to move on and seek bigger and better opportunities that potentially we can't as a club provide. And so sometimes, you know, that can come out in not a nice way and leaves a bit of a bad taste in the coach's mouth. He's really just trying to go and seek a better opportunity or extend themselves as a coach. So, you know, being a good mentor, you know, it's that other, you know, train them well enough so they can move on, but treat them well enough so they stay. Like, it's a sort of a contrasting thing, but it's, you know, you sit there and you're like, yeah, I know there's bigger and better out there for you, and I want to help you get there. And what you end up finding by having that, I guess, mindset is eventually they'll come back, and because they will be so appreciative and grateful for, one, what you've done for them, but two, how you've then, I guess, supported them trying to better themselves.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, is you want people to move on.
Yeah.
Like, that should be the goal. You don't get an under-12 kid that stays in under-12s for 8 years. You want
It'd
people
be nice. Some
have tried, it turns out, but there have been plenty over the years that have been really comfortable where they're at, but you actually want them to go and learn from different people, and you see it in the college system a lot over in the States, that they're not really looking to hire someone that's been at a school for 7 years. Like, they're looking for someone that's gone and worked with 4 different coaches over the course of 7 years, because that shows there's some growth and some different experiences and all those kinds of things as well. So it is really important as well that there's an expectation. And part of that too is the belief that people will move on from you.
Hmm.
That's part of it. Believing in someone you are mentoring that they can go and be something else. That's a big part of it, I find.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and even if you're talking about athletes, for instance, you know, you might be a club that isn't affiliated with there's none of them that are now, but, you know, the WNBL clubs, for instance. And they go off and they play for that club. That is a that should be seen as a reflection of what the club has done in terms of development and things like that, rather than, oh, they're leaving us. Oh, no. They're going and getting an opportunity that is just, you know, amazing, that can't be provided by that particular club. So, you know, being able to have that maturity of, yes, I want you to go do that, the results actually end up better for you than the alternative.
Yep. And the last one, Nein Schadenfreude.
Wow.
Now, leave it to the Germans to have two words that can sum up about 18 sentences. But essentially, you do not revel in others' misfortune. And that is something that can be very difficult for people to do, because there are times where someone's possibly treated you poorly and you can sort of feel like, it's come undone for you. Excellent. I feel better about that. That's not what we want to be as people, in particular as coaches. So whilst difficult to do, celebrate the good stuff and show empathy and sympathy for the not so good stuff, because you don't know what other people are going through. It can be difficult for a lot of people out there, but we want to keep as many people in the sport as we possibly can. It is not a good place, I would suggest, to revel in others' misfortune. It's a poor mindset that is not going to leave you happier. Like, it'll be short term, you might be happier, yeah, but long term, it just piles on in that space. And I know Ash had a fairly long chat about this with a number of people as well and on the podcast too, but really, let's try and, as a community, continue to try and be better. And that's what we should be as coaches.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you think about it, having that behavior or having that, you know, thinking that it's okay to revel in others' misfortune, what's going to happen when that's your turn? So by doing that, that is, I guess, opening the door for that behavior to be acceptable. I'm not going to sit here and say I haven't done it. I have. But again, it's like, you know, the be curious, not judgmental. As long as we're trying, keep trying, to understand and show empathy, and put yourself in that position and be like, oh, this would be awful. You know, I had a coach, this was years and years ago, coaching a Vic Metro team, and lost. And I had actually had a previous sort of, not altercation, but we weren't really friendly at the time. But like what you were saying before with the webinar that you attended, as soon as that team lost, that coach was standing by themselves. And if that team had have won, you wouldn't have been able to get to that coach, because there would have been so many people around wanting to shake their hand and tell them how great they were and all this sort of stuff. I walked up to that coach and just said, hey, tough. Like, they were a good team. You know, you did what you could, all that sort of stuff. Now, that was probably my best example of when I've got that right. I have examples of when I've got it wrong. But if we can keep trying to support each other and show empathy towards each other, it then becomes a far better fraternity to be a part of, instead of worrying about, oh, what's everyone going to be saying?
And it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, we all know the low road is always easier one, because there's a lot of downhill involved in that. But the high road...
Less cardio.
Far less cardio. The high road is a lot harder to get there, but it is a more worthwhile one. It'll make you a better person, which in turn, I feel, makes you a better coach.
Yeah.
So that's the hope for everyone. If you haven't seen Ted Lasso, you've now pretty much got the cliff notes for the last two seasons. You can always go and see it on Apple TV. I do recommend it for everyone out there. It is a great watch. Good feel-good story, but also very relatable to your coaching as well. So would recommend it. Zoe, thanks for jumping on the podcast and turning up. Coops, thank you too. Any last thoughts from you? Yep, very good. Thanks very much, Coops. Appreciate it. Coaches, we will be back next week. We are talking all things trials. We are coming into the VJBL trial season.
Coming in hot.
It's going to be an interesting one. So what you would see in your training sessions, what you would be looking for, how you select teams, all that sort of stuff. So that's what next week's podcast is on. So if there are any questions between now and when we record, which is usually Wednesday, Thursday, by all means, let me know and we'll happy to address those too. But coaches, thanks very much. We are very close to getting back on court. Get the whiteboards out. Get to Officeworks, pick up the 10-pack, because I know we will draw all over those whiteboards when we are able to get back on court. Get the cones ready, get the skipping ropes ready. We're very close. Coaches, thank you very much for listening. Good luck with your coaching, and we will talk to you all again next week.
Look, tune in and join the tribe on